Time for Live and Local. It's your connection to local music. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our guests today include the Kirkland Trio, who are a piano trio based at Millikan University in Decatur. Georgia Hornbacker is the violinist, Amy Flores the cellist, and Judith Mancinelli or Mancinelli, apparently you can take your pick on the pronunciation, is the pianist, and they've come over from Millikan to our Urbana studios. We'll be hearing some of their live recordings on the show, and we'll have a couple of special guest guitarists who are going to be appearing in Urbana tomorrow night at the Canopy Club, and we will leave them as a little bit of a mystery. They'll be playing a couple of tunes towards the end of the show, kind of a fusion of Balkan and Greek folk, classical, and world music and more in their new duo. That's coming up the later part of the show. We'll begin with the portion of the finale of a trio by Haydn, played by the Kirkland Trio. I've been calling it the Millikan Trio, the Kirkland Trio, based at Millikan University here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. live performance of the final movement of a trio in C major by Franz Joseph Haydn, played by the Kirkland Trio, based at Millikan University in Decatur. They are Georgia Hornbacher violin, Amy Flores cello, and the pianist is Judith Mancinelli. And this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. All three of the members are with us in the studio, and we'll be chatting with them in just a moment. And later on the program, the Andreas Kapsalis Goran Ivanovich guitar duo making a cameo appearance towards the end of the show. WYLL is coming to you from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, made possible by a generous gift from Alice and Robert Campbell. So thank you all for coming over, Judy and Georgia from Decatur, I guess you were, to our Urbana studios. And Amy, you didn't have far to go. You're right here in town. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Well, that's good. And you came. You picked a beautiful day, too. You have a nicely varied program chosen from some of your live performances coming up. We have some Piazzolla, some Mozart, and some Mendelssohn. So we're going to look forward to hearing that. How long has the Kirkland Trio been around?
The Kirkland Trio was established in 1987. I joined the Millikan faculty in 1986. Judith was already there, and the dean at that time was Wesley Tower, and he was working really hard to build up the string department. He also established faculty chamber ensembles, and he really wanted to start a piano trio. So about a year after I joined the faculty full-time, he established the trio, and we were named the Kirkland Trio after the Kirkland Fine Arts Center, and he chose the name. And the cellist at that time was Harriet Williams, and we've had several cellists over the years, but Judy and I are the two who have been with the group from the beginning.
You're the founders.
Yeah.
So who was Kirkland?
I can't remember their first names, but the Kirklands donated the majority of the funds for the Kirkland Fine Arts Center when it was built.
That's like asking, who are the Krannerts here at
the University of Illinois?
I mean, probably there aren't that many people who actually know the answer to that, although you can go over to their lobby and look at their pictures right there.
Yes, there's a picture of the Kirklands in the lobby of the Kirkland Fine Arts Center, and I can't say their first names.
Well, that's okay. I was just curious if anybody knows, but of course their name immortalized. And it's a very nice-sounding hall, too.
Yes.
I've heard some things over there.
Good acoustics.
And a nice space for it. So, Amy, you're one of a string of cellists, apparently. How long have you been with the group?
Let's see. We moved to Central Illinois in fall of 2000, so that's when I started.
With the trio. And you've been at Millikan, obviously, for that whole time. Are you technically full-time faculty, adjunct faculty?
Adjunct.
And Georgia, you're one of the few, and maybe you are too, Judy, full-time music
Actually,
faculty there.
Actually, Judy's adjunct also.
Really?
I've just been here forever. Georgia and I eat cellists for breakfast.
So. We've had several adjunct cellists. Some have moved away. Some have gone on to other jobs. And
so what is there about cellists who can't? You're holding your own, though, Amy. You might have the record, but sounds like. Here, and I knew
closing
one of
the, in on it.
I knew one of the previous cellists whose name I'm going to now blank on. We actually have a recording of you guys with them.
Eileen
Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah,
yes.
Eileen Johnson.
We have publicity pictures. It's Kirkland Trio cellists through the ages.
Are there other resident chamber groups of any kind at Millikan, or are you it?
No, there's a faculty woodwind quintet. There's a faculty brass quintet. There's a jazz trio. The jazz trio, I don't believe, ever was official in the sense that they received faculty load credit, but the woodwind quintet and the brass quintet did.
And why do you think it's important for a school of music like Millikan's or like anybody's to have a standing chamber ensembles of any kind or in the case of, I guess you could call, can you call jazz chamber ensembles? I guess so.
Yeah, you could.
Well, what I noticed is after we were established and I guess you'd say we were forced to find time on our schedules to set aside for rehearsals. It actually spawned other groups and ensembles because we were thinking in those terms, more in terms of chamber music and collaboration. We had some people in place that already did it, so we would do a little more mixing and matching. And
you're talking about among the students?
Among the faculty. It also helps us in to have more experience ourselves when we coach the students, of course. But I think it just is a little spark to then go the step further for the other ensembles that have different instrumentation, different amounts of people.
And I think it's a good example to the students of collaborative performance. They play in chamber ensembles, and we coach them, and they perform on recitals. But they don't have too many opportunities to hear professional chamber music ensembles. Some of them drive over here and hear things going on at Krannert. There aren't that many chamber ensembles that tour and give concerts on campus. So I think it's important for them to see the faculty doing what we are asking them to do.
And do you guys go on tour? Do you mostly play at the school? Or
we do a little bit of both. It's very difficult to make a living as a chamber music player, so I think we are quite grateful for the opportunity to have a basis then. And we do, of course, playing on the campus, but then do whatever we can in even neighboring states. We can't tour too much. We're pretty busy on campus.
And in the current economic climate, the faculty are being asked to do more classroom teaching. The university wants to rely less on adjunct instructors, and they're asking the full-time faculty to do more of the core courses, teaching the core courses. And as a result of that, we lost the load credit for the faculty ensembles. So now we have to make the time ourselves when we want to perform, and we don't have a set scheduled time every week to rehearse like we used to. But we still try to do it as much as possible.
Milliken's always been pretty heavily dependent on its adjunct faculty, though.
Very heavily dependent.
What does that mean, Amy, to be adjunct faculty? I'm not even sure.
Oh, that's a tricky question.
Yeah.
It means that you're not full-time. It means that you go in a couple of days a week, or it could be almost full-time, but you don't get the same benefits as a full-time professor.
So are you one who is just about full-time?
No, actually, I teach 1 or 2 days a week there.
And how many students have you got?
I have 6.
And are they at what kind of levels? Varying
levels. Some are performance majors, some are education majors, and some are music minors or Bachelor of Arts majors.
Which is actually not a bad percentage of what's still a fairly small music school in a fairly small college, but it's always amazed me when I've had conversations with other folks from Milliken at the percentage of students in the whole college and the whole university who are involved in some musical ensemble or another.
Yes, the College of Fine Arts is probably one of the largest divisions of the university, and it's where a lot of the growth is going on. It's one of the strongest areas of the university and attracts a lot of students.
Before we let time get away from us too much, why don't we hear another of your performances? These are all live performances that you selected for us.
Yes, yes. And the next one is a piece by Astor Piazzolla. It's called Oblivion. It's a very total contrast to the Haydn. It's a very slow, sultry composition.
One of Piazzolla is an Argentinian composer, and he sort of made concert music out of the tango.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine a pretty slow, sultry tango. It's not meant to be danced to, but you could.
You could.
And it's a very sensual sound to it, I think. So this is a piece called Oblivion by Astor Piazzolla. It's the Kirkland Trio from Milliken University in Decatur, heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Oh, that was music by Astor Piazzolla. Sorry for the delay. I ran out of the studio and lost a sense of time here. Music by performed by the Kirkland Trio called Oblivion. I love that music. I actually like lots of Piazzolla's music. I hope our listeners do, too. I used to play quite a bit of it on my early morning show, and now we only get to play it when guest performers do it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Programs on FM 90.9 are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to experience the three-play summer studio series this June and July. More information is at krannertcenter.com. The members of the Kirkland Trio are with me in the studio today. Amy Flores, the cellist. Judith Mancinelli is the pianist. And Georgia Hornbacher, the violinist. We've got some more music coming up. We also have later sort of a cameo appearance by the Kapsalis Ivanovich guitar duo from Chicago, who are going to be in Urbana performing tomorrow night at the Canopy Club. But first, more music and conversation with the Kirkland Trio. How do you go about choosing programs, given that part of your purpose is to be at least somewhat educational for the students? Who wants to answer?
Well, I have
this
to
would
say
be Georgia here.
That we largely give Judy a lot of free rein to choose because the pianist has the most notes, and their part is the most difficult. So we often start with picking the big piece on the program, and often that's the one that's most demanding for the pianist. We throw out lots of ideas and toss them around, and usually Judy has a wish list of things that she wants to play. And so between what she hasn't played and what the rest of us would like to play, we pick the big piece on the program, and then we choose other things to go around it.
So why Piazzolla, Judy?
Because Amy likes Piazzolla.
I brought the piece in. I had played with Jonathan Keeble on his faculty recital when he first came, and we did it as a flute, cello, piano trio.
Jonathan is the flute faculty at the University of Illinois.
Right, and I thought it would work well with traditional piano trio setup, and so we did a series of Piazzolla pieces, and we included the Piazzolla Four Seasons.
Oh, those are beautiful pieces also. It's amazing those pieces exist in so many different arrangements. I don't know how many of them Piazzolla did himself. Do you know if he did this particular one?
I don't think he did.
He didn't.
And I can't remember who did the arrangement, but
almost everything that is popular is done in every which way. And him being a film scorer, he's used to having everything being grist for his mill, too. So you just can almost adapt it any way you want to. A lot of things are orchestrated. I saw at one of the skating competitions an orchestral melding of two of the movements of the seasons. It worked very well, winter and spring. You just hear it all over. Ever since his death, isn't that the way it goes with artists? Once they die, they become popular. He's become so wildly popular that people just want to play it in any form they can.
I don't think master. I knew that about him, that he was a film composer.
Yes. He also, did you know, he had a lot of death threats against him?
No.
Because the tango is taken very seriously in Argentina. He did a lot of things, particularly with, I guess we're not playing it today, but Spring. He had a lot of influences of Bartok, Stravinsky, jazz influences, those kinds of things. So he would incorporate a lot of dissonant sounds and get the more rough, let's say, red light district idea into his tangos. And some of the Argentine people did not like that. They think that the tango is their personal national treasure. It would be like defacing the Star Spangled Banner to them. But they got over it. Now they like him very much.
Well, that's good for him, certainly, that he didn't get offed by those people who felt offended by their dance. And I understand that actually the tango originally was sort of a combat dance, particularly among men, where it would be. It was very, very, very interesting origin, which we won't have time to go into. We want to be sure to have time to play the other excerpts you brought on from some previous recitals. We've got some Mozart next.
I chose this one because, and Judy asked me if I had anything special to say about it, and I didn't tell her what it was. But this is one that I feel showcases Judy's very lyrical playing, very musical playing. Many of the other things we're playing are very fast and don't have an opportunity to show a lot of phrase shaping. Also, the middle section of this movement draws on the sort of a sparkling scalar ending of the opening theme, and there's a lot of really nice interplay between all three instruments in the middle section.
Okay, so this is the Andante movement, Andante Cantabile singing, which applies to what Georgia was saying about the piano, from a C major trio by Mozart, played by the Kirkland Trio at Millikan University from April of 2005. You're hearing it today on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a performance which we unfortunately had to fade out of a little bit just for as I'm watching the clock on Live and Local here. The Andante Cantabile movement from a C major trio by Mozart, played by the Kirkland Trio, a piano trio based at Millikan University, who are my guests today on the program. I'm Kevin Kelly. Today's broadcast on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Design Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. And we had some beautiful playing here. Thanks very much for bringing that over. We don't have a piano in our studio, which is why we're not actually able to have you play live, but we're happy to have you with us in the studio, Georgia Hornbacker, Judith Mancinelli, and Amy Flores. So we've got some Mendelssohn coming up next, and I understand, Judy, you've got a little story to tell about this music.
I do. I'm kind of into the symbolism kick these days, symbolism in music. What I've found out is that in the 19th century, listeners and the composers themselves were much more into certain thematic ideas than we tend to think of today. So the more lofty works were quite programmatic. There are a few major themes that they used that were easily recognizable, but there are no titles to the works and you can't prove it. So what I'm going to say is basically my thoughts. I know them to be true, but I can't prove it. So I'll just put that out there. Goethe's Faust, a poem play, burst on the scene in the early 19th century and took Europe by storm. It's not a Christian play, but in it there are the themes of sin and redemption, which would make really meaty material, very dramatic material for artists. So we have a lot of operas and symphonies that do use that theme, obviously, but then there are other major dramatic works that also use that theme that is not something that people would ordinarily know. I think that this particular Mendelssohn trio falls into that category. I just like to say that most of the symbolism they use originated in the Baroque era or even further back. You have some things that the listener might not be obviously aware of, but it's in C minor, which is considered the fate mode. C major is purity and redemption. You hear da-da-da-da, which is the fate symbol. You hear a little devil talk, and you'll hear reference to the doxology, the redemption idea at the end.
So this all shows up in this one movement.
In this one movement,
and
yes.
The rising C major scale at the end symbolizes the soul, the redeemed soul going to heaven.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a full plate there for somebody to cram into a little piece of music. Well, let's see how he does. This is the final movement from the C minor piano trio of Felix Mendelssohn. Heard on Live and Local here on FM 90.9, played by the Kirkland Trio from a concert of the Millikan University faculty in 2006. Thank you. So I guess that's Faust triumphing at the end or something like that. Somebody triumphs at the end.
At least his girlfriend does.
Yeah, he didn't come out too well at the end of that. Some Goethe analogy or symbolism going on in that final movement from the C minor piano trio of Felix Mendelssohn, played by the Kirkland Trio, based at Millikan University in Decatur. They're here with me today on Live and Local. Amy Flores is the cellist, Judith Mancinelli the pianist, and Georgia Hornbacker the violinist. And we appreciate very much your coming on the show today. And you'll be playing somewhere on campus in the fall, I gather?
Yes.
Any specific scheduled performances yet?
Not at the moment. We haven't picked our program for next year yet.
So. Well, we've heard a bit about how you go about that, so we assume Judith will be taking the lead and figuring out which she feels she can manage in her fingers the best. And probably
and
the rest of you spice
ears
it up.
With something new.
That's the way it goes, a little negotiation. Well, I really appreciate your coming on the show just to tell us a bit about what you're doing and hear some of your playing.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next, we have the Andreas Kapsalis Goran Ivanovich Guitar Duo, who are going to be in Urbana performing at the Canopy Club tomorrow night, and we'll hear them here on FM 90.9. It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. From one guitar duo to another. That was the brothers from Brazil, Sergio and Odair Assad, playing some music by Jean-Philippe Rameau. And Allemande actually was originally a keyboard piece, but you're hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9 on guitars. And next on the show, we have the Andreas Kapsalis Goran Ivanovich guitar duo. Andreas is of Greek ancestry, I gather, and living in Chicago, and Goran Ivanovich from Serbia, also living in Chicago. And you guys each have your own group and trio, respectively. When did you decide to get together as a duo? This is Andreas.
We started kind of playing together as a group, as a duo, just kind of off and on over the last couple of years, and never did anything beyond just doing a show maybe like twice a year or something. And our repertoire basically was just a handful of things. And then last year we kind of decided towards the end of the year that we should kind of put a project together and actually do some touring and go for it instead of just doing it as a occasional thing. So ever since then it's been kind of just gathering a lot of steam and kind of just moving on its own and at a nice rate. So
Andreas, tell us a little bit about what you play either on your own or with your trio and what you're bringing to the duo.
Well, I mainly perform my own compositions with my trio outside of a handful of little arrangements of songs. But it's mainly original compositions, guitar, percussion, and drums, and that's the ensemble. So it's kind of it's a vehicle for my own compositions to kind of come through instead of looking for other ensembles to play my stuff or any other ensembles or orchestras or anything like that. This is my own way of kind of showcasing my own compositions and at the same time being able to perform.
And would you characterize it stylistically at all? We're going to hear some of the sample that you have with Goran, but we won't get to hear some of your own.
It's very eclectic. Kind of my upbringing is very eclectic, so kind of shows through. I listen to a little bit of everything, and I come from my father's a classical violinist, so I have that background, that discipline, but never formally studied classical jazz or anything outside of maybe composition. I did a lot of score analyzing and stuff on my own and did a lot of studying on my own. But the composition has kind of been my way of creating my own etudes for my own technique. And with this group, we're both composers in our own right, and our ensembles are both different, but there's the similarities are we like very cinematic music. We're very influenced by film scores and film composers. Bernard Herrmann's a big influence of ours, as well as like Ennio Morricone. So a lot of our music is performance-driven. It's we kind of have the experience performing and entertaining on stage, but the compositions are not never suffer because of that. So it's a little bit of both. We are performers, but we are composers, and both our groups, I think, are vehicles for our own composition. So this group is great because we're two composers coming together, and it's a very democratic, very nice listening exchange experience where sometimes I'm more supportive, he's more solo. Sometimes it's vice versa, and sometimes we exchange that. So it's an interesting relationship working with another composer versus just being the only composer.
Well, let me put a similar question to Goran Ivanovich. What are your stylistic roots? What does your group tend to do, and what are you bringing to this duo?
Well, I studied classical music. I studied classical guitar in Europe, and that's how I got interested in music. At some point, I started improvising and writing my own little pieces, the same as Andreas. You know, I was, you know, doing all this big repertoire, and there were, you know, little things that I did on my own, and little by little creating bits and pieces of music, and that eventually developed into more serious composition. My group is Eastern Bloc, and it's upright bass, saxophone, drums, and I play classical guitar. And I would say it's a very high energy, you know, exciting group that fuses a lot of different styles. You know, me coming from a classical background, my other guys in the band study jazz, and all of us have, you know, big appreciation for folk music around the world. So I think this fusion is very, very natural with my band, and also, you know, historically, fusion is something that happens all the time. So, you know, I listen to a lot of Balkan folk music, and I think that's kind of the focus of the band.
And it'll be definitely reflected in the duo you have with Andreas Katsalis. Well, yeah. Before we run out of time, we'd better hear some of your performance here. This is from your disc called the Andreas Katsalis Goran Ivanovich Guitar Duo. First and only disc so far, right?
Yeah.
And a tune called Shadow Thief, heard in Live and Local here on FM 90.9. music called Shadow Thief, played by the Goran Ivanovich Andreas Kapsalis guitar duo. I guess they reverse it in the official name. And who wrote that one?
I think we just kind of both, you know, worked on it at some point.
See, that's a good collaboration when you're not even sure who actually wrote the piece.
Yeah, I don't keep track of those things.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's a lot of times just the snowball effect. Somebody will come up with an idea, and then someone will contribute something, and then, you know, finish each other's sentences till eventually it's... That was actually the last song we wrote before on this album. We're kind of just crunching. I think we wrote it on tour, and then we were coming back to finish recording, so...
We're talking to these gentlemen because they're in Urbana right now to be performing at the Canopy Club tomorrow night at 9:30 is when their set starts. And if you'd like to get tickets, you can phone the Canopy Club at area 217-344-2263. It's a very nice venue on the University of Illinois campus. Right in the heart of the music side of the campus. How would you describe what you're trying to do together? I mean, your publicity says that you're fusing Serbian and Greek folk music with modern classical world jazz and beyond, et cetera, an experimental duo. I mean, in what way is this experimental?
Well, I mean, just from the, you know, what kind of guitars we use and, you know, what kind of techniques we have. Usually you would see, you know, a classical guitar duo that plays, you know, traditional classical music. In this case, we have Andreas who plays acoustic guitar, and he has, what he does is tapping. So, you know, it kind of creates a harpsichord sound almost. And so just from that standpoint, you know, I have more of a classical, traditional technique, and he's doing his own thing. And it's acoustic guitar versus classical guitar, which is a neat sound, and it also has, you know, a lot of challenges. We have to be smart and creative in order to not overplay or, you know, and, you know, from musical point, you know, we are, you know, really into creating music that is not out there, is not heard too much. So combining all those folk elements with modern music and film music, I think it's exciting for me.
Well, I've enjoyed hearing the CD that you had sent me, and I was glad we had the opportunity, really kind of the last minute, to have you on. I wish we had more time to talk and play more, but we build this as a cameo appearance, and I guess those things are by definition fairly short. And so it's Andreas Kapsalis and Goran Ivanovich, based in Chicago. They're here in Urbana to play tomorrow night at the Canopy Club. Again, that number for tickets, 217-344-2263. Thank you both for coming in on short notice and for a short visit. And here is another track from that CD. It's called Samba in 10. listening to the Kapsalis Ivanovich Guitar Duo on Live and Local on FM 90.9. This afternoon will become partly sunny with a slight chance for a passing thunderstorm, the high around 80. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of a brief shower in the evening and then a chance of showers and thunderstorms well after midnight, the low 57. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a few showers and thunderstorms, the high 78. We're currently at 73. News headlines are next. More music at 106. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating Transledger's W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.